The dream was to connect California's major cities with a high-speed rail line. The nightmare is a monumental concrete mistake that is eating up some of the most productive farmland on Earth. And so we ask, where is California's train to nowhere going?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1210th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Manila who are tuned in to the Food Chain Podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, for a mere $33 billion, California's politicians, led by Governor Jerry Brown, promised to connect the state's major cities with a high-speed rail line that would take passengers from Los Angeles to San Francisco in 2 hours and 40 minutes. California taxpayers said yes, but as the project progressed, the Sacramento and San Diego lines were dropped. The travel time between Los Angeles and San Francisco doubled, and the cost of the project tripled to $98 billion. California taxpayers were left with the prospect of a much slower speed rail line that would only go half as far for triple the price. And so California's new governor, Gavin Newsom, said, "No way." What Californians now have is a monumental concrete mistake that some call Jerry Brown's Stonehenge, and it's eating up some of the most productive farmland on Earth. That we are losing so much farmland to this project leads us to ask, where is California's train to nowhere going? To find an answer, we head up to Sacramento, California, for a conversation with Mark Wasser, who is the attorney at Mark A. Wasser Law Firm. Mark, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you.
So you're involved in property law principally, correct?
Correct.
I see eminent domain and inverse condemnation and land use and zoning and civil rights and free speech and natural disasters as well. So all of these things must be pretty much lead you right up to the high-speed rail train, right?
I've gotten myself pretty heavily involved in the high-speed rail project, correct.
And you representing multiple clients in the San Joaquin Valley, so we would assume that would be landholders?
Yes, I'm representing a lot, actually, primarily farmers who own and farm or lease and farm land in the southern San Joaquin Valley, Fresno, Kings County, Tulare County, and Kern County.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think most people in California appreciate how sort of, I'm going to say messed up, I guess that's a polite word, how messed up this project is. I don't see, at least in the foreseeable future, any possibility that this train is going to connect San Francisco and Los Angeles as was initially proposed.
Right.
The concept of a train going at a high speed between San Francisco and LA is very attractive. Most first world nations have high speed trail service to train service. We don't. Somehow this whole thing got derailed by politics and other concerns, and rather than running the most direct route between San Francisco and Los Angeles and making that the objective, the planners decided to run through the middle of the Central Valley so they could connect Fresno. And then in the course of doing that, of course, they're now going through, as you said, the best farmland in the United States, right through the middle of it. And it is very complicated. It's very destructive. And it's taking a lot of farmland out of production.
So to date, we've already spent $6 billion, correct? And now the train is that was supposed to go from L.A. originally, and I guess from San Diego to San Francisco, has been chopped way down to going from Bakersfield to Merced, 119 miles, correct?
Something like that, yeah. I'm not sure about the connection to Merced. Maybe that's going to happen. It's not happening right away. Right now, the segment they're working on is from Madera, which is about 30 miles south of Merced.
Oh, okay.
To Wasco, you know, to Wasco, which is maybe 15 or 20 miles north of Bakersfield. And so the Madera to Wasco segment is what they're building right now. And that segment goes through the city of Fresno, and then it goes through the city of Hanford, and it ends up in Wasco. And it is going to be an 85-mile-an-hour shuttle service, as I understand it, between Madera and Wasco. I guess someone has the illusion that people want to travel between Madera and Wasco. I'm not aware of that market. And it's going to be, they've purchased locomotives that have a top have an operational speed of 85 miles an hour instead of the advertised 220. And they're building a rail bed. They're not building it yet, of course, but when they get to it, they're going to be building a rail bed that's not even designed to go 220 miles an hour, and it's not going to be electrified because the locomotives they purchased are diesel locomotives. So pretty much every attractive component of this project is gone, and we're left with essentially what we have, which is an Amtrak like operation. And Amtrak's great. I'm not in any way attempting to criticize Amtrak, but we already have Amtrak. This was supposed to be high speed. It's not going to be high speed.
So it's pretty much a complete boondoggle.
Well, I think it is. I think it's beyond question that this is a train. I mean, the expression train to nowhere is sort of accurate. I mean, it's not connecting any population centers. It's not going to be built to run high speed. It's not going to be electrified. It's going to be diesel. All the advertised bells and whistles that were supposed to make this project attractive have vanished.
Now, when Governor Newsom took office and he looked at the situation, and he just said, well, this isn't going to work. But I guess from what you say, it doesn't even go from Bakersfield to Madera.
It may connect to Bakersfield eventually, but right now the southern terminus is Wasco, which is a little bit north of Bakersfield, and the northern terminus is Madera, which is south of Merced. If they connect it from Merced to Bakersfield, maybe, but that's not anything that's going to happen soon. And in his State of the State message, after he was inaugurated and took office, Governor Newsom made some very critical comments about the project, which caused many people to think, "Oh, well, it's been stopped, it's been killed, it's over." Well, that's not true at all. They're every day now, they are clearing out walnut trees and almond trees and vineyards in the prime agricultural area of the United States for a train that's going to essentially parallel the Burlington Northern Santa Fe and Union Pacific tracks, provide a redundant shuttle service at the same speed that we already have.
And Newsom said, this is ridiculous, so we're going to limit it, this project in scope. We're not going to do the L.A. to San Francisco. And when the federal government heard about this, they said, well, okay, then we're not going to give you any more money. All of a sudden, the Fed money that the state was counting on is gone. And not only that, the feds are looking to the state to recoup some of the money already given the state. Did I read that correctly?
The federal government pulled back about $1 billion. I think it was $970 million that they pulled back and canceled that appropriation. The federal government has given the project more money that has not been pulled back. I don't know the exact amount. I think it's $2 or $3 billion. It's my understanding that that money is still available. There have been threats from the federal government that they would pull it back, but I don't believe that's been pulled back currently. The current funding is primarily based on cap and trade money. Cap and trade, of course, is conceptually money that is supposed to be collected to represent reduction in greenhouse gas emissions and should ideally be used for projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that, of course, is no longer an objective of this project because it's going to be diesel instead of electric, and it's not going to provide the benefits that the original project was supposed to provide.
Now, did I read somewhere where California is currently suing the federal government over some of those monies?
Yes, the state of California has filed a lawsuit in federal court against the federal government over the $970 million that the federal government pulled back.
You know, it just seems to get crazier and crazier and crazier. Some people are calling it the Jerry Brown Stonehenge. Why would they call it that?
Well, I've not heard that expression. I don't deny that maybe people are saying that. I haven't heard it. I don't equate this to Stonehenge. I think boondoggle is the word that comes to mind. I mean, it's it's essentially there was in San Francisco the famous Embarcadero Freeway, which was a freeway to nowhere,
right?
Because it had neither an on-ramp nor an off-ramp. It was just an elevated section, and they finally tore it down. Well, this train is sort of like the Embarcadero Freeway. It starts in Madera. It ends in Wasco. There's not a great market for people traveling between Madera and Wasco.
And is there not already a train going there, like you said?
Of course. Of course. There, the Union Pacific and the Burlington Northern Santa Fe tracks both run from Madera to Wasco. So this will be now a third rail line that parallels essentially the two existing lines. That's not what the people voted for. I mean, it's just very simple. That's not what the people voted for. People had this notion that the ballot measure was actually going to lead to what it was advertised to provide, which was high-speed service connecting San Francisco and Los Angeles. That is, well, it's not happening now, and whether it ever happens is going to be many, many, many years away. High-speed rail has acknowledged they don't even have the technology developed yet to tunnel through the San Gabriel Mountains, the Tehachapi Mountains, or the mountains on Pacheco Pass. And you can't connect to San Francisco, to L.A., without doing that, and they're not able to do that yet. So it's a Central Valley segment running through farmland is what it is.
Now, you talk a lot about how it's going through farmland. What does it look like to have this train to nowhere plowing right through some of the world's most valuable farmland?
I think that high-speed rail, when they laid out the right-of-way, didn't really know what they were getting into. We've had some off-the-record conversations with high-speed rail representatives that have acknowledged this is a lot more complicated than we thought it was, and it is complicated. If you take, for example, a hypothetical walnut orchard that's 80 acres, typically, orchards and farms are square or rectangular because they're laid out on the grid system that was surveyed back in the day. And so you have an 80 or 60 or 160-acre farm or orchard that's essentially a square or a rectangle. High-speed rail is going at an angle through every farm that I'm aware of.
So it's not exactly north to south, then. It's probably northwest
it's
to southwest.
Yeah, it's like generally in a northerly to a southerly direction, but the track turns and bends here and there, and it goes across farms at an angle. So farmers that currently have a square are going to end up with two triangles or two trapezoids with this angular right-of-way going through the center of their farm. Second, it's going to be a closed right-of-way because conceptually it's supposed to go fast, although it's not, so there's no way to cross the track. So if you're standing in the middle of your farm and this track goes through it, then you can't get to the other side of your farm anymore because it's separated by a closed right-of-way. So you have to go out to the nearest county road, drive 2 or 3 miles to an overpass, go over the track, drive 2 or 3 miles back. It might be a 4 or 5 or 6 mile drive to get to the other side of your 80-acre farm.
And, of course, you're driving a tractor, right?
And of course, as I was going to say, you're going to be driving a tractor or a slow-moving farm implement that goes 5 miles an hour. So you're talking about a 30, 45-minute or longer trip driven by someone who's not really proficient at driving on the highway because they're hired so they can operate the tractor off-road. Tractors are not licensed to operate on the highway. They use the so-called red agricultural fuel that's not taxed because it's not supposed to be used on the highway. So there's all kinds of problems there. Then you get back to the farm. Here we have the farmer with an irrigation system, and he irrigates his 80 acres. He's got pipes that run north, south, east, or west. Well, the high-speed rail line cuts all those pipes. So now he's got to come up with a new irrigation system to get water across the right-of-way. And high-speed rail will let him have what they call a sleeve, where they put a 40 or 30 or 28-inch pipe under the track, and then the farmer has to put his pipes through that sleeve. Then when it come out on the other side, he's got to rebuild his agricultural system to plug into this single source under the track. That's a problem. Many times they take out his well, because the well happens to be in the middle of the track. So he's got to drill a new well. then he's got to farm in the after condition. After they get through building this, he's got to farm his orchard. Well, he drives his tractor down the row. Now he's got to turn around in the middle of the field and go back because he can't cross the right-of-way. Then he's got to get his tractor across the right-of-way to the other side, do the same thing over there. It just messes the whole operation up, all the way up the San Joaquin Valley. From Fresno to Bakersfield, the line goes through almost entirely farms. We represent one guy with a trucking company. We represent some people with a couple of businesses, and a couple of houses. But by and large, all the property that's affected by this track are farms and ranches, dairies, and it's a mess. If you operate a dairy, dairies are among the most highly regulated businesses in California.
Can you hold that thought?
Yes.
We're going to have to take
sure.
a quick break. Folks, this is the Food sure. Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Mark Wasser, attorney representing agriculture in the California's Great Central Valley in its fight to survive California's train to nowhere. Right back. Well, in the beginning, it was going to go somewhere, but then something happened, maybe politics. Now it's going nowhere. And now we're looking at what happens to agriculture as a consequence of this train to nowhere. Before the break, we were talking about dairy farms. My goodness, what does a train to nowhere do to a dairy farm, Mark?
If you have a dairy, you're very highly regulated. The state regulates nitrogen emissions and wastewater emissions and how many cattle you can have. It's very regulated, and that's okay. That's the way it's been for years. But if you put a railroad track through the middle of the dairy, you essentially destroy the dairy, even though it's going to be, you know, a 120-foot wide corridor through maybe a 800-acre dairy. It's going to go through your feed corral or your breeding corral or your wastewater pond, and you can't move those things because under the regulations, every inch of your dairy has been accounted for already by the license you have to operate it. So there's no way to move your wastewater pond or to move your breeding corral or to move your feeding corral because you got no place to move it. So you have a railroad through the middle of the dairy. And so we've seen dairies just go out of business. And high-speed rail, of course, has to buy the whole dairy because even though they're just taking a strip through the middle, they've essentially put the dairy out of business. And so we've seen dairies sell for $18 million because high-speed rail took a sliver through the middle, but it put the dairy out of business. And that is just, you know, it's horrible to think that a project that's supposed to be going from San Francisco to Los Angeles is really out in the middle of dairy land taking dairies and not going to either San Francisco or Los Angeles.
You know, there's not a single thing about this project that seems to make any sense other than the original vision that we could do high-speed rail. China does high-speed rail. Why can't we do high-speed rail?
I voted yes on the proposition to fund high-speed rail back several years ago. And when I was in the voting booth, I had this vision. Oh, I'll be driving down Interstate 5 someday, going from San Francisco to L.A., and I'll see this train go by, and I'll think that's cool. Well, if they would have built it down the I-5 corridor, it would probably be completed by now. And in that part, down the I-5 corridor, which is the most direct route, there's the California Canal, there's the Delta Mendota Canal, there's already utility infrastructure out there. There aren't very many crossroads crossing Interstate 5. The farms out there are of an entirely different nature than the farms in the heart of the valley. It would have been a much easier, cheaper, and more direct project. But no, politicians decided, oh, let's run the train over to Fresno. Well, as soon as you make that decision, you're no longer building the train from San Francisco to L.A. You're building it out in the middle of the farms, and that's what they did.
How did they sell us on this train to nowhere? What was the pitch? I mean, I remember them talking about, you know, it only taking, what, 3 hours to take a train from L.A. to San Francisco. But I've driven that a zillion times, and it only, like, takes 5 hours to drive it. And then you have a car when you get there.
That's right. That's right. The pitch they sold us on was it's going to be high speed San Francisco to Los Angeles. That was the pitch. The voters never got a chance to vote on, oh, what if we change this and make it, you know, a train to nowhere out in the middle of a farmland? That never went before the public. They just made that decision politically because they did. And in the process of doing that, they destroyed the project.
So was there a great push by the folks in Fresno to come to us as well? Was that the, and Sacramento?
I believe there was a political push by the by elected officials in the city of Fresno who had a fantasy that they wanted to make Fresno some kind of bedroom community for Silicon Valley. And they saw this connection as putting Fresno on the map in some political way. And I think that's I think that's delusional thinking. They compromised the project to the point where it's going to fail. They're not going to put Fresno on the map politically because it's not going to connect to Silicon Valley. All the benefits of the project have been extinguished, and we're left with a train in the middle of farmland going nowhere.
And when you say in the middle of farmland, as you were speaking earlier, it's pretty much destructive of almost every farm it touches.
It is destructive of almost every farm it touches. That's a true statement. I mean, we represent a farmer. The project is going to take something like 29,000 square feet out of an 80-acre farm. You think, well, that's not very much. That's like less than half an acre. Yes, but the area they're taking happens to be where all of his irrigation facilities are, his pipe, his well, his valve strut, all of that. And so he's got to replumb his entire irrigation system for the whole 80 acres because high-speed rail happened to take the part of his farm where all that stuff is. So even if the acquisition is very small, as in this case, it's enormously destructive, enormously expensive, very frustrating to the farmer. And, of course, high-speed rail wants to come in. They want to take possession, and they want to start clearing out the things that are in the way. Well, he's farming. He's trying to harvest. He's trying to water his crop. And so how do we coordinate all this so high-speed rail can come in, destroy his irrigation system, and yet somehow figure out a way for him to keep farming the rest of the 80 acres they're not taking? All kinds of problems. And that's why this project is over budget and behind schedule.
When we talk about the money, where's the money coming from? You mentioned cap and trade.
I think most of the money is coming from cap and trade.
Okay. Would you describe that process for people like me who don't quite understand it?
Well, the cap and trade is funded by credits given for greenhouse gas reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. And then there's funds available, and then those funds are being allocated to the high-speed rail budget so they can spend it. And, of course, high-speed rail was supposed to be this very green project because it was supposed to be electrified. Well, it's not being electrified. The locomotives they purchased for the Central Valley segment that goes nowhere are diesel locomotives. And so the whole principle of cap and trade has been violated, in my opinion, because they're not building the project that's going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that was intended. They're going to build another diesel system.
Now I know why I don't understand cap and trade, because it just doesn't make any sense. But it must make sense to somebody because they're making a lot of money on it, and they're spending a lot of money on the train to nowhere, and it doesn't look like it will ever go anywhere. Now, when they first made the pitch, was it pitched as a green project? You know, this is something we can do to end global warming or something?
Yes. In fact, if you follow the high-speed rail Twitter feed, they are routinely putting out tweets, I guess they are, about how green this project is. But it doesn't look green to me. And if you look at their website is full of self, you know, promoting comments about how many people they employed and all this kind of stuff. Well, that's terrific. But they're not building a train that's going to meet the need that the voters voted for.
And yet it keeps going. It's kind of like the Energizer Bunny project. It just keeps going, in spite of the fact that it seems like nobody wants it to go anywhere.
Well, right, and I wonder, actually, how informed the elected representatives in Sacramento really are about this project, because if they were out in the field, as I am, on a regular basis, they would realize, my gosh, this project is dysfunctional. It's not doing what the voters intended. It's not going to provide a public service. Why are we doing this? I think, to a large extent, the elected representatives have just sort of turned their heads away and have thought, well, it's Jerry Brown's problem. He's out of office, not my problem, and no one's paying attention to it. But it's having an enormous impact every day on farmers.
What do you see when you go down there from Sacramento.
If you get in your car and drive down 99, when you get to Fresno, you will see large elevated concrete structures, which are for some of the route going over and above and across Highway 99. Caltrans moved Highway 99 to the west several hundred feet to allow high-speed rail to run through the rail yard in Fresno. If you go south of Fresno and follow the alignment out into the farmland, you see 100 to 300-yard cleared area going off into the horizon through cotton fields, vineyards, walnut orchards, almond orchards, pistachio orchards, and dairies, and there's earth-moving equipment hauling dirt through the remainders of these orchards that are now triangulars instead of squares as they build up a berm through the middle, which they're going to put the rail bed on someday. That's what you see.
And there's no sign of a berm, right?
There are segments where they piled dirt up in the center of the right-of-way, but it's not finished, and they haven't even awarded the contract yet to the rail builder. The contractors that are working out there now are simply earth-moving contractors. They're going to award a different contract when they get ready to really lay the rail, and that hasn't even happened yet. They have to build the berm, lay the rail, and do all that, and that is, I don't know how far off it is, but it's a long time in the future. They don't have all the right of way yet. There are still gaps where they still don't have the right of way because farmers are trying to negotiate with them on how to keep farming while their farms get cut in half.
Wow. Now, how did this project go so awry? It seemed like, you know, there was a lot of volition. I mean, a lot of people were behind it. Everybody was. This is going to be the greatest thing in the world, and look what China does. And boy, we just completely boggled this. And how did we go so wrong here? I mean, was it because Jerry Brown was in charge?
I don't know that. I don't know that. I'm not. I actually don't know how it went off the rails. I mean, I really don't know that. I can tell you it's off the rails. But the political process that got us there, I'm not prepared to blame any individual for it. It's probably a collective bureaucratic fiasco where a lot of people just weren't paying attention to the objective. If you're going to build a train from San Francisco to Los Angeles, that has to be your objective. Once you start to build the train somewhere else, you lose focus and you go off the rails. And that's what happened.
So that had to be a political decision by somebody or other.
I'm sure it was. I do not know how that happened, but mm-hmm. but it was a political decision.
So, who got the contract to build this thing?
Well, there are three different contracts that are awarded in the Madera to Wasco area. High-speed rail refers to them as construction packages 1, construction package 2, 3, and construction package 4. Most of the work I'm doing is in construction package 2, 3, and construction package 4. The contractor in construction package 2-3, which is called CP2-3, is a consortium called Dragados Flatiron Joint Venture, which is a combination of a Spanish engineering company and an American company. The contractor in CP4 is a company called Rail Builders. The contractor in CP1, which was the Madera segment, I know who that is, but I can't think of it at the moment. Mm-hmm. So there's three contractors handling those four segments.
Well, they're probably doing what they're told, right?
Oh yeah, so they're doing what they're told. Yeah. They're doing what they're told, and so it's not a question of the contractors going off and doing it. No, they're doing what they're told by high speed rail.
So it's high speed rail that's went off the rail.
High speed rail went off the rail.
Okay. Now, wow, I assume that you're probably intimately involved in the process by which the high-speed rail is going about buying all this farmland then, right?
I am.
How does that work? It's just a case of eminent domain? We need this land? You sell it to us.
Correct. It's eminent domain. High Speed Rail has filed many eminent domain cases. At one point, I had around 70. I think I have fewer than that now because we've resolved some of the cases. But Yeah, high-speed rail files eminent domain actions in court. They're in the Madera, Fresno, Kings County, Tulare County, and Kern County courts. There's a process. They file the complaint. The property owner files an answer. Then typically high-speed rail wants to get possession of the property right away. That becomes a complicated process because the farmer, of course, is farming. Trying to earn a living, trying to use the land as a productive source to provide food. High-speed rail wants to go through the middle of it. So dealing with the possession issues takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Ultimately involves usually a court proceeding, but oftentimes they end up in an agreement that takes a while to work out. We spend a lot of time on that. Then high-speed rail will have an appraiser appraise what the state believes the property's worth. The owner will have an appraiser also. The two appraisals seldom agree. Oftentimes, the high-speed appraisal is far below market. And so you get into a process of negotiating what the damage is and the price and all that really are. All of this takes a long time, and typically these cases have a 2 or 3 year lifespan between the time they're filed and the time they get resolved.
Wow. Now, that would be a problem I don't think China had when it built its high-speed rail, correct?
I don't think China spent a lot of time going to court with property. I think they just took the property.
Uh-huh. And moved you to Siberia or something like that. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking with Mark Wasser about a colossal boondoggle, California's high-speed rail train to nowhere, which really is going nowhere. And worse than that, it's eating up America's best and most productive farmland, and it's eating up a lot of money in the process. This is Food Chain. We will be right back after these messages, so please do stay tuned. Well, I'm trying to come to grips with just how big of a boondoggle California's high-speed rail train really is. But it's almost impossible to comprehend the scope of how bad things are. It was originally designed, the high-speed rail was designed to serve the California's principal big cities, San Diego, L.A., Sacramento, and San Francisco. But as things progressed, San Diego and Sacramento lines got chopped. So now we're just serving L.A. to San Francisco. But wait, now we're not even doing that. Now we're going from Bakersfield to Madera. But no, we're not even doing that. We're going from nowhere to nowhere. And we're spending huge bucks. And furthermore, it's not going to go 220 miles an hour. It's going to go 85 miles an hour from nowhere to nowhere. And furthermore, it's not going to be electric. It's going to be diesel. So it's not going to be green. It's going to be brown. And it's costing big, big bucks. But somehow, those bucks are coming in on cap and trade. And if you can figure that out, good luck on you, because I can't. Or maybe I just refuse to. Is that a fair summation, Mark Wasser?
That's close. Yeah, that's basically the picture.
So you're working with agriculture in California's Great Central Valley, trying to come to grips with this. How are farmers coming to grips with it?
Very painfully, with a lot of frustration and a lot of irritation and aggravation. You know, farmers want to farm, and farmers don't want money for their farmland. They want you to leave them alone so they can farm. And so even though these damages are enormous, and farmers are typically receiving large amounts of compensation for what's happening to them, that doesn't make the farmer happy. The farmer doesn't want the money. The farmer wants the farm. They want the land.
In many cases, those farms have been in the family for a long time, haven't they?
Absolutely. We represent farmers who are second, third, fourth generation farmers. We're talking about farms that were set up in the late 1900s and have been farmed by families ever since then. And we're having these home plates, these original, ancestral homes, as it were, cut in half by a railroad track that's going to parallel the existing railroad tracks that are already connecting these communities. So the whole thing just doesn't make any sense.
So the farmer gets a big chunk of cash. Now, do they not have to pay capital gains on those taxes for, a farm that was set up at the turn of the last century or something like that? The gain must be incredible. Is there a way for them?
Well, I'm not a tax lawyer, and so I don't give tax advice, and our farming clients all have sources that they can get advice from. But no, it's not a capital gains issue. They have, under the Internal Revenue Code, there is a way to do tax-free exchanges, and when you're paid for something that's taken from you, that's generally not a capital gain because it's compensation for what you lost. Okay. And so the tax consequences are not the enormous problem. There are ways to manage that. The enormous problem is that you no longer have a nice rectangular 160-acre farm. You now have two 75-acre triangles, for example, with a 200-foot corridor going through the middle, and you can't get from one side to the other.
Thereby making your business terrifically more difficult than it was before. You have to come to grips with that.
Correct.
Somehow.
Correct. Correct. And so there's two components to the payment aspect. One, of course, a farmer has to be paid for the land that was taken and for the land that he still has, but which has been diminished in value because it's no longer a nice square, it's a triangle. So that's one thing. And the other thing is what's called goodwill damages, where the farmer who's running a business, right, he's running a business, he's farming, and each one of his trees is like a little miniature factory that produces peaches or nuts or whatever. And so he loses, let's say, 20 acres of trees. Well, that's a loss of income and production. And then after this train is built, it's going to cost him more per acre to farm the same property because he's got to do everything twice. He can't drive his tractor down the row from one end to the other. He drives halfway, turns around, goes back, and when he finishes one side, then he has to drive his tractor 4 or 5 miles to the other side of his farm and finish it over there. So farming becomes more expensive going forward, which is an increased cost, and his profit is reduced because he's lost trees. Those are called goodwill damages. So he gets paid for the land, and he gets paid for the goodwill damage.
So he's being compensated, and yet he's losing the means of production. He's losing his farm.
He's being compensated, and high-speed rail typically pays a lot of money, but the farmer's not happy. That's not what he wants. He doesn't want a lot of money. He wants his farm so he can farm efficiently and grow food and sell it so people can eat. That's what he wants to do. And so no farmer is happy because high-speed rail pays him a lot of money to take a strip through the middle of his farm. That does not make a farmer happy.
So when you represent farmers in agriculture against the high-speed rail authority, you, of course, can't fight them on the fact that they may or may not take the land because they're going to take the land, right?
That's correct.
So all you can do is fight them on the terms.
The issues become how to negotiate possession so the farmer's ability to farm is protected, and then how to negotiate the amount of money that is paid so the farmer gets compensated fairly for, or at least as fairly as the system allows, for what's been taken from him.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way you can simply say, you can't have this land, it isn't going to happen.
That's true. It is possible in an eminent domain action to object to the condemning agency's right to take the property. But that's not a successful tactic in this case because the courts have upheld the state's right to acquire property for the high-speed rail project. And even though we believe the project is off the rails, as I've said, the state has the right to acquire the property. Now, if they don't use it within 7 years, and there's some risk that they may not, then the farmer may have the right to get the property back because the state has to use the property within 7 years, and this project is so behind schedule, that may not happen. But that's nothing we can deal with today. In the short term, The farmer loses his land and he gets money.
And I guess with respect to how long this project's going to take, that's one of the boondoggles that we haven't even brought up yet. I guess the Bakersfield to what, Madera line or is scheduled to be completed at the same time that the entire project was supposed to be completed in, what, 2028 or something?
I don't know. I actually pay no attention to those estimated completion schedules because experience has taught me so far that this project is way behind schedule, and I tell my friends, don't buy a ticket because it's going to be a long time before you can ride this train.
Now, we tried to figure out why it became such a boondoggle, but why did it take so long to, you know, to complete a 119-mile section of it?
Because the state had enormous problems getting it designed and acquiring the property. One thing we've not talked about is this project is what's called a design-build project, design-build. And design-build is a construction concept where the project is designed as you go along.
Oh, are you kidding
High-speed rails, in-house engineers designed this project to the 15% completion. When they give the contract to the builder's responsible for the remaining 85% of the design. And so as the builder completes this 85% of the design, the builder realizes in almost all the time, I mean almost all the time literally, there's something wrong with the initial design. We have to change this. We don't need that property. We need this property. Or we thought we needed that property, but we need more over there. And so high-speed rail is, and this is true, I think, with every case we have, they are redesigning the project as it is fleshed out, and they find out they didn't need this, they don't need that, they need that over there, and so they make changes. And so in a lawsuit, like we've talked in high-speed rail, in an eminent domain action, the state files a complaint. Well, we have cases where the state has now filed three successive complaints because the first one was wrong, the second one was wrong, they didn't get it right till the third one, and so all of that takes time. It takes them time to figure that out. It takes time to do the design. It takes time to draw up the survey, all this stuff. And so by the time they finally figure what they want, it's been a couple of years. Then you have to deal with possession. Then you have to deal with compensation. These things just, there's a lot of delay that the state did not anticipate.
Well, it would seem like nobody has any incentive to make things work right in the first place anyway, because you're going to get paid. So
well,
why don't you just hang around and make some money for the next 150 years?
Well, and see, there's some truth to that, because the contractor, these design-build contractors who have been awarded the contracts that we talked about earlier, if the project gets changed, then they get to put in for change order compensation. And if the project is delayed, then they get what's called delay damages. And so sometimes, in many of these cases, I think in the CP1 segment in Madera, when they were finally done, the contractor had a delay damage claim of some $40 or $50 million. In the CP2-3 segment in Fresno, Kings, and Tulare, the delay damage claim's not been determined yet, but it's going to be in the tens of millions of dollars. And so the contractor benefits from all this because right. The more changes and the more delay, the more money the contractor makes. And all of this, of course, accounts for delay and the fact that it's over budget.
And going nowhere. Well, where is it going? Where is California's train to nowhere going? I mean, you're if anybody has an idea, I think it would be Mark Wasser, because you're the man in the field watching it go nowhere, talking to the people who are being run over by it going nowhere. Where is it going? I mean, I tried to read up a little bit on it and tried to look and see what you know, the state government's doing under Gavin Newsom, and doesn't appear that there's much happening there. And, you know, the federal government's looking at it going, are you kidding me? You want more money for this? So I just don't see any leadership at all.
I don't know where the project's going. I mean, I think I'm reasonably confident that they will acquire right-of-way between Madera and Wasco. I'm reasonably confident they will do that. Beyond that, I have no idea. I have no idea if this project will extend either direction beyond Madera or Wasco. I have no idea if they'll ever connect San Francisco, Los Angeles. I don't pay attention to that because, as far as I'm concerned, that's a fantasy.
And the whole project then is a fantasy, isn't it? Do you think it was always do you think it was always a fantasy? I mean,
I didn't think it was a fantasy.
Yeah, you voted for it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a great idea. Well, you know, we you know, as a nation, as a state of California, the public would benefit from high speed rail service. I thought that was an attractive proposition. The voters are not getting what they voted for.
And it probably would have been. You know, there's one place I see where they're considering high speed rail, and that's between Los Angeles and Las Vegas. Now that seems to make some sense. Not going to be going through any beautiful farmland. Might have to go through some mountains, though. So I don't know if that's real or not either.
Years ago, in one of my former roles as a lawyer, I was special counsel to the city of Las Vegas for 10 years, and I did a lot of eminent domain acquisition for the city of Las Vegas. And in 1990, which is what? How many years ago is 1990? It's like a while ago.
Yeah.
In 1990, the city of Las Vegas was trying to propose a high-speed connection between Los Angeles and Las Vegas in 1990. And today in 2019, they're still talking about it. I've become somewhat cynical about these things. They don't happen. They don't happen efficiently. And I'm not going to sit around and wait for there to be a high-speed connection between L.A. and Las Vegas. They've been thinking about it for more than 20 years, probably more than 30, because I think they were thinking about it before 1990. They're still thinking about it, but it's not happening. And we're still thinking about San Francisco to L.A., I guess, but it's not happening.
Do you think it'll ever happen?
I don't know. I really don't.
Well, you know, the great tragedy, you were talking about Fresno, and I had a chance to be over there a couple of weeks ago, and I saw the incredibly huge concrete infrastructure being built for that train.
Right, right.
And the real tragedy to me is that all that money is going into that cement, that concrete, and none of it's going into rebuilding Highway 99. Which is what really needs to happen. But I guess that's the nature of things. Mark Wasser of the attorney at Sacramento, Mark A. Wasser Law Firm, defending agriculture against California's Train to Nowhere. I want to thank you for joining us, Mark. And folks out there, remember Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our trains to nowhere. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.